Argue, argue, talk, 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 exaggerate, argue, pontificate, argue, just talk, shut talk, up. Talk, why won't you listen? Argue, why won't you see? I know the story, just listen to me.
You're better off when you're spouting off. And now, here's your host, Karen Cataline.
Well, welcome everyone to Spouting Off. This is BBS Radio Station 1. We're going to try this again. Last week, I had the pleasure of following James Gilliland and meeting him on his show. I called in. I had never really heard of him, and it was really quite eye-opening because, you know, I'm a natural skeptic. I do a show, Spouting Off, on Tuesdays, 1 p.m., Pacific, and it's all about politics and current events and what's happening in the world. And I was so pleasantly surprised by James Gilliland and the things he was talking about last week that I decided to call in because I thought I was doing a biweekly show last week. There was a little snafu, shall we say, and I got cut off because it was the wrong week. Let's just say, hey, stuff happens, but I was okay with it. And if you were listening last week, I even had some callers who were waiting on the line and there was a little problem. But nonetheless, we're going to try this again. And heaven knows if we're going to be talking about all the things that are going on in the world, your opinion, my opinion, we all get to spout off. And I love hearing your opinion. You may need to do a lot more meditation when we're done because there is indeed a lot going on. And, just for those of you who are still listening from James Gilliland's audience, number one, as I said, it's a pleasure and an honor to follow him. And I was pleased to hear some of his perspectives. He clearly is an independent thinker, which I like to think of myself as well. But I watch what's going on, and I'm going to give you lots of opportunities to call in and express your opinion. So the first thing I'm going to start off with is that today is Veterans Day. Not only is it 11/11/17, but it's Veterans Day. And while many realize that Veterans Day always falls on November 11, that's 11/11, it's a day to honor our veterans. Few realize the historical significance behind this day. It's changed a bit over the years. Veterans Day originated as Armistice Day and marked the end of hostilities of World War I. And it occurred at the 11th hour on the 11th day of the 11th month. Therefore, the day is always recognized as November 11th, regardless of the day of the week that it falls on. And Veterans Day is a day not only to remember those who died in service of our country, to our country, but also to recognize all those who have served and who continue to serve today. Everybody has a story about a veteran, because most people have veterans in their family, in their history, in their relatives. And I'm not going to tell a story of Veterans Day, but I'd be very interested to hear how you either celebrate or mark the day. If you were doing an 11/11 meditation with James Gilliland, that would be interesting to hear about as well. So I'm going to give the numbers early because we're going to touch on a lot of different issues that are going on right now. The number to call into Spouting Off so that you can spout off is 888-627-6008. Let me do that again. 888-627-6008. Or you can call direct 323-744-4831. Let me give you a little heads up of the issues that we're going to be discussing about today. There's something, a little thing I like to call little bites of big issues, because as I continue to do talk radio, which I have loved for, oh my goodness, forever, I notice that it is an interesting time to be doing talk radio because there's so much going on. And the biggest problem that I have is simply trying to decide what to talk about and what to focus on. So there's an awful, awful lot that we're going to take little bites of, but then we're going to move on. And so I'm going to give you an opportunity to call in open lines as well. I'm going to continue with what things I think are going on, but you get an opportunity to talk about whatever is concerning you. And if I don't know about it, I'll learn from you. And that's one of the great things about talk radio, live talk radio. You get to spout off too. So after Veterans Day, the thing I wanted to mention is this fascinating political football, the NFL, which I have gotten wind of the fact that this weekend, particularly tomorrow on NFL Football Sunday, there is a huge boycott happening tomorrow. Now, I've gotten a whole bunch of messages on social media about people that are intending, even if they have tickets to the game, they plan to boycott the NFL tomorrow, whether they're watching, whether they're listening on commercials, whatever. I'm interested to know if you plan to boycott the NFL or if you're at all a football person at all. I got into football kind of late. I've certainly never been much of a sports fanatic. But this issue with the NFL has been an interesting one. Apropos of that is the NAACP this week wants to get rid of the national anthem altogether. Now, fascinatingly enough, they're also advocating a statue of Marion Barry, the corrupt mayor of Washington, D.C., but yet they, not just the NAACP, but the activist Antifas and all of those folks, want to get rid of our anthem, and they want to tear down statues of our history, but yet they want to erect a statue of Marion Barry. What does all this mean? If you're going to protest, shouldn't you be informed about what you're protesting about? The message of the NFL protests have switched. First, it was about quote unquote police brutality. Then it was about the anthem itself, which they claim is racist. And I'm not sure they're getting their story straight. And then, of course, it is that because many of the players happen to be black, it must be racist to disagree with the players who are kneeling for the national anthem. Now, first off, if you're going to do a protest, I think it's important for you to know something about what you're protesting. This song, the national anthem, the Star Spangled Banner, is not racist. It has to do with the War of 1812. We're not going to go into the enormous history of all of that, but do you think that we should get rid of the national anthem? I would love to know. And because I'm never going to ask you a question that I'm not at least willing to answer myself, I say no, absolutely not, and hell no. If you can't deal with your history, erasing it isn't going to make it go away. It merely contributes to the ignorance of the populace. And if you subscribe to that theory that those who forget history are doomed to repeat it, well, how can we forget, how can we remember history if there are people in our country who continually want to erase it? Tell me that. I don't understand. Apropos of that, another little bite of a big issue is the issue of a group of people that call themselves Antifa. And I'm sure you've heard of this, Antifa. They claim to be anti-fascists, but they employ fascist tactics in order to claim that they're anti-fascist. Now, I have kind of a checkered background. Not only do I have a master's degree in social work from Columbia University, of all things, but I was in showbiz for a really long time. And I find it fascinating that we're living in a time, and I do, by the way, hope to have James Gilliland on my program in the weeks to come. We haven't figured out exactly what date he's going to come on, but I can't wait to hear him enlighten me and inform me about some of his perspectives on the issues of the day and about how to stay sane, hopefully, while you're watching them all happen. But the Antifa people have succeeded in accusing everyone else of what they're doing. So to claim that you're anti-fascist and then to justify your own behavior by being fascist and employing fascist tactics is, a little backward. Now, last weekend, when I was just getting started on my show, we were all kind of bracing ourselves for the threats that we heard, again, on social media. So we weren't really sure whether they're going to happen or whether they're not going to happen. But the Antifa people, I don't know how to say that. You can correct me. Call in and correct me. Antifa people were threatening that they were beginning on November 4th of last week, the weekend, that they were going to start doing what they could to dismantle the presidency of Donald J. Trump. And that it just won't stand, and he's a racist, and on and on and on. We've heard this for a year now. People who, because they don't like something, they have to make sure that the rest of us are prevented from either liking it or disagreeing with them. This is a very, very dangerous idea. And it is the very essence of fascism, which is that you claim to know the answer and you're going to make sure and either shut other people down or tell them that they're racists or bigots for not agreeing with you. So the smear tactic of simply deciding that other people are exactly what you are is sinister in a lot of ways. Let me pull this apart. It's if you can convince yourself that the people you don't like and you disagree with are evil, then somehow it allows you to justify your own behavior towards them. You can employ all kinds of dangerous tactics against them and tell yourself that you're only being just. Case in point was this very, very confusing issue of Charlottesville about a couple of months ago, where people came out onto the street. And who knows, when you make broad generalizations about what's going on in a melee on the street, I looked at some of those videos and I swear I could not figure out what was going on except a lot of people behaving very badly. So when it was used as a political football that Antifa people are merely fighting against fascists and racists and the KKK, well, that is used more to obfuscate the truth than to shed light on it. But I digress, which is, of course, the whole thing in talk radio is I digress. So we have another 45 minutes to be with you. And again, I'm going to keep the lines open and for you to be able to talk about anything that might be on your mind or bugging you or spouting off about. But leading from Antifa into something that happened last weekend, which I'm a little concerned about might have something to do with the Antifa tactics, these threats that, in fact, people are going to come after those who disagree, was an attack on Rand Paul. Rand Paul is the son of Ron Paul. I don't always agree 100% with Rand Paul, but Rand Paul was viciously attacked on his own property while he had his headphones on last weekend while mowing his lawn. At first, they said that he was fine and everything was fine, and that it was merely a dispute on the grass about their lawn. He lives in a gated community in Bowling Green, Kentucky. He's a senator from Kentucky. And it seemed as if everybody wanted to once again sweep this kind of thing under the carpet. But as facts came out, and I would encourage everybody to wait for the facts to come out. We're living in a time in which charges and countercharges are being thrown back and forth, whether it be in the bandwagon of sexual harassment in Hollywood, which I hope we'll be able to get to. Now, in my opinion, that's a pervasive area of concern, and it's utterly fascinating that those things are coming out. But even so, we still have to wait for the facts of a story to come out. We can't just... It bugs me when I see something I could spout off about, no matter how obvious it may be that someone has been abusing their power in Hollywood or in Washington or anywhere else. It's kind of important to allow each case to be decided individually. I am a big proponent of individual freedom, and that includes individual responsibility. So this idea that you must believe the woman no matter who it is and under any circumstance is not expressing individual freedom, okay? It's merely saying if she's a woman, she deserves to be believed, and if he's a white Christian male, he deserves to be prosecuted. This is mob rule and very, very dangerous to my way of thinking. But getting back to Ron, excuse me, I keep calling him that, Rand Paul. What got me worried was that after the initial report of what was going on with him, bit by bit and on much more obscure reporting went on that in fact 6 ribs were broken and he's got some very serious injuries. He broke 6 ribs. Now, granted, he's not a really, really hulking kind of an individual, but you have to have sustained pretty serious damage in order to break 6 ribs. And I think he's got some kind of pleurisy of some sort. It's really quite a bit of a concern. Now, is it a coincidence? I'm not a big conspiracy theorist, but is it a coincidence that he happened to be on the very baseball court, the baseball field, where a person shot at a bunch of Republicans who were practicing for a charity baseball team, a charity baseball game? Then we find out that the fellow who attacked Rand Paul, his name is Boucher, was an extreme liberal who had gotten into all kinds of political disagreements with Rand Paul. And in fact, they disagreed profoundly on healthcare, because as you may or may not know, Rand Paul has been quite the champion against Obamacare and for individual freedom in healthcare and health insurance. And if you have followed, and you'd have to be living under some sort of rock not to be following, and I'm sure you have, what's going on with Obamacare and the promises to repeal it. In fact, the Congress hasn't repealed it yet, because it turns out that they're a lot more corrupt and lied to us a heck of a lot more than we thought they did. But Rand Paul stand firm, and he believes quite profoundly in getting rid of Obamacare and cutting it out by its root and allowing choice and competition in as much as possible. Now, the person who attacked him was very much against this whole notion of individual freedom in healthcare. And here's an irony for you. Okay? I found this amazing. Let me get it here for you. Okay? So the neighbor also reported that Boucher was awarded a 2003 patent for a pain relief product called Thermavest, which was sold on QVC in 2005, according to a news report at the time. Is it a coincidence? I don't know. That out of some kind of hysteria of a sort we don't yet know, charges have been filed against this Mr. Boucher or Boucher for attacking a member of the U.S. Senate and putting him in the hospital, I guess, or certainly attacking him very, very seriously so that he cannot do his job in representing the Kentucky constituency, that he invented something for pain relief called Thermavest. I don't know. Was he trying to make sure that Rand Paul needed it? Or is it a case of enormous projection and irony that the man who claims to care so much about helping other people with their pain imposed and attacked a guy and caused a great deal of pain? The tendency of people to get so emotionally overwrought about politics today is something I'm sure that James Gilliland has a lot to talk about. I'm going to have to make sure that I ask him about that. Is that how do we remain sane in such an incredibly insane world? What I was leading up to in all of that, and it does concern me, I am not going to jump to conclusions, but it is clear that the person who attacked Rand Paul last weekend was indeed an ultra-liberal. Many of the neighbors have said so, and that he disagreed vehemently with Rand Paul politically. Now, there are continuing to be examples of liberals who lose their lunch or lose their mind or lose their temper or anything else and attack Republicans and conservatives simply on the basis of politics. Now, it's not every liberal who thinks this, but there does there's a tendency on liberals' part to see themselves as more compassionate than anyone else, to see themselves as more understanding than anyone else. But because they're coming from a place of ultra-emotionalism, that doesn't stick around very long when they get upset. It worries me that, in fact, there hasn't been much said. And the case of the guy who shot at a bunch of conservatives, that was clearly, I guess you could call it a political hate crime. And ironically, or not so coincidentally, Rand Paul was right there. He was there. He didn't happen to be, thank God, shot. But a lot of other Republicans were. And what also concerns me is that when there is one of these horrific shootings, I mean, we could do 3 hours just on what is going on with these mass shootings. It seems as if when there's a narrative, when there's evidence that the narrative doesn't really comport with what the media wants you to think, suddenly we don't get much information. Do you remember when Gabby Giffords' terrible, terrible story was shot by Jared Lee Loeffner, and she, thank God, survived that attack, and there were some other people that were also shot? The left went bonkers, making huge, sweeping events, and they politicized it for weeks after because they thought that Jared Lee Loeffner was a conservative who lost it and started shooting liberals. They found out, in fact, that he was a Democrat. Now, I am not saying that if you're a Democrat, you're going to do that. But it is of great concern that people immediately jump to the political nature of things in this very, very politicized country in which we're living. We're seeing a lot of hysteria going on. So that, my friends, are a little bit of bite of big issues. I want to shift now a little bit to a study that was done. I've been holding on to this for weeks because there's been so much to talk about. But there's a study from the Cato Institute, which happens to be a libertarian think tank. Now, if you want to label me, that's going to be a little hard. I'm conservative on some things. I'm libertarian on some things. I even have some, shall we say, classically liberal views on personal freedom and limited government, which is a classically liberal point of view. But let's get away from the labels here. The Cato Institute did a study in which 71% of Americans said that political correctness has silenced the discussions that society needs to have. 58% have said that their political views, they're afraid to share them. Now, how American is that? To be afraid to share your political views in the United States of America in 2017? That concerns me greatly. Let me just read this to you. The Cato 2017 Free Speech and Tolerance Survey, a new national poll of 2,300 U.S. adults, found that 71%, I did say that, Americans believe that political correctness has silenced important discussions. Now, in addition, it also says, and I'm shuffling papers just like Rush Limbaugh does, liberals are most likely to feel comfortable sharing their political beliefs, while conservatives most likely self-censor. Now, I wonder why that is. I think it's because liberals in general, this is a generality, tend to be much more attacking and intolerant of opinions that they don't agree with. And they do anything they can to shut those opinions down. I mentioned before that if you can demonize the opposition, call them racist, bigot, homophobe, xenophobe, simply because you believe in secure borders and a country that gets to be proud of itself, just like individuals get to be proud of ourselves. I mean, would you really like an ideology that said you're supposed to hate yourself as much as possible and you don't get to have personal boundaries? That's one of my favorite subjects, by the way. I love talking about personal boundaries and how that can translate into national boundaries. Boundaries are a good thing. Boundaries allow you to ask permission before you cross them. It doesn't mean you put up walls. Although the wall on the southern border, there is nothing wrong with, considering that every other country in the free world, shall we say, is allowed to have boundaries and rules and laws concerning who will and will not come into their country. If you're not allowed to have that, then I guess you have a sign on your front door that says anyone and everyone can enter and anyone and everyone can take my property and I will have to feed and clothe them for the rest of my life. If I have a very favorite phrase, slogan, shall we say, that I've had for a pretty long time. I made it up, actually. And it is, if you can't say no, your yes means nothing. Think about that. If you don't get to say no about who will and will not enter your house, your country, if you don't get to say no about who will and will not have a physical sexual relationship with you, then your yes means absolutely nothing, because free will is important for almost anything else to occur. On that note, it's about halfway through our show, so I think it's time to take a little break. And when we come back, I'll get to the main topics of Donna Brazile. Can't wait to talk about that. Uranium One, big topic, and anything else that might be on your mind. This is Karen Cataline. This is Spouting Off, and we're going to be right back.
Hi, I'm Devin, a student at Hillsdale College. Here is president of Hillsdale College, Dr. Larry Arnn, on what the founders meant by general welfare.
The great preamble of our Constitution states that the purpose of the document is in part to promote the general welfare. Contrary to the modern understanding of that term, the founders understood welfare to mean public good or happiness. This was understood in accordance with the principles of the Declaration of Independence. Such happiness is contingent on securing to each citizen his natural rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Because this requires the government be limited, the powers of the federal government were enumerated, and local matters were reserved to state authority. This was precisely intended to secure these inalienable rights and in turn promote the general welfare.
This Constitution Minute was brought to you by Hillsdale College. To receive a free pocket constitution and declaration, go to constitutionminute.com.
Do you have a secret that's been bothering you? Have you been wondering if what you're thinking or feeling is normal? Is there someone with whom you've needed to clear the air, but you haven't been able to find the right words? Sometimes you need an objective, second opinion to help you see your problem more clearly. Ask Aunt Emma, and she'll help you move past what's getting in your way. She's a former therapist who is wise and caring, but instead of therapy, she'll give you terrific advice. It's free to ask Aunt Emma and explain your need, problem, or question. If you both agree, you pay only $1.39 a minute. It's anonymous, it's confidential, and you'll be surprised at how effective it is. You can ask Aunt Emma by going to facebook.com/askAuntEmma. There, you'll find her phone number and extension number. That's facebook.com/askAuntEmma. Ask Aunt Emma today.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to a bonus edition of Spouting Off. I'm your host, Karen Cataline, and my show generally broadcasts live on Tuesday, 1 o'clock Pacific, 2 o'clock Mountain, 3 o'clock Central, got to remember this, and 4 o'clock Eastern time. So if you like what you hear, please listen to me live, or you can go to all of my podcasts. I keep an archive of every show, even if I've guested on a show, and I've done a few of those this week as well, at KarenCataline.com. If you know how to spell my name, you can find me anywhere. Cataline is spelled K-A-T-A-L-I-N-E, and it's Karen the normal way, so it's KarenCataline.com. You can find me at Twitter. You can find me on Facebook, or you can find me on my website. And there's many opportunities for you to listen to podcasts of the show. But what is even more fun, I hope, is for you to listen live and call in if you like, or you can also call and just listen on the telephone or online. I'm having a blast doing this, and I continue to learn more and more every week that I do it. It's different being behind the microphone than having listened as a talk radio listener for so many years. I want to continue now. There's so many issues, as I mentioned, going on. A couple of thoughts on the latest brouhaha, can I call it that, of Judge Roy Moore, who is 4 weeks from his election for U.S. Senator to replace Jeff Sessions. Now, as an aside, there's a lot of people, including myself, who are wondering when Donald Trump is going to replace Jeff Sessions. Maybe Jeff Sessions should go back to his old Senate seat, because he seems an awful lot more comfortable as a U.S. Senator than as a U.S. Attorney General. A lot of people are wondering when he's going to grow some backbone and start prosecuting some of these issues. He really did hurt his effectiveness when he decided to recuse himself in the Russian probe, when in fact the Russian probe is something that needs to be going on in the Hillary camp. Hillary camp on the left side of the aisle. We're going to get to that. But Judge Roy Moore is, CNN and other figures like to call him, a controversial figure. But here's the reason it's so important. It's important for a lot of reasons, because there's this giant bandwagon going on, mostly in Hollywood, with people every day being accused of sexual harassment, sexual misconduct. What one of the many things that bothers me is that all of this is being lumped together into one blob. Again, not a lot of clarity and careful analysis on each case. The left is notorious for this. They love to lump everybody together into a big collectivist bathtub and say all women should be believed, all white men are mean, horrible ogres, and therefore it is fascinating to see Hollywood suddenly begin to attack itself. And it's very important to look at the politics behind this, because, well, today it's political to tie your shoes. And Hollywood, by the way, has made everything political. As an aside, I want to let you know, last week on Tuesday on my show, I had a BBS host, lovely gentleman named J. Lewis Mills, with whom I probably don't agree on much of anything. I'm going to be a guest on his show on Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, the day after mine. And he was a guest on my show, and we talked about the NFL. It was interesting. When he had a guest, I called in, and I got a little bit reprimanded because I talked about how political it was, this thing in Hollywood. And he didn't like it much. We're going to have to, this is a great tease. You can either listen to my show on Tuesday or his show on Wednesday, when I get a second crack at talking to him about not only Hollywood, but how come when Hollywood is suddenly melting down with all of this, these sexual harassment accusations and cases and lots of women coming out of the woodwork, they're allowed to say it's not political. And yet when you watch the enemies, is that a Freudian slip? I don't think so. When you watch the Emmys, when you watch the Academy Awards or any other of these award shows in which Hollywood is constantly congratulating itself and thinking they're the only people in the world, they make everything political. The Emmys was one giant hate fest of Donald Trump. So now to say that all of these accusations of sexual harassment are not political, well, they certainly are. And we need to adjudicate and consider each and every case separately. Like in the case of Harvey Weinstein, there are many, many, many women coming forward now. I find it fascinating that women are coming forward in droves, and yet for 40 years they didn't. Now, I can understand they were afraid they wouldn't be believed, but there's also a case to be made for the fact that women have known there really is a culture of this in Hollywood, and a lot of women have made no secret of the fact that they've slept their way to the top. Case in point, I've talked about this on my weekly show, Joan Crawford. A lot of people knew, and she's only one of many, many cases. They wanted success so badly that they were willing to do anything to get it. That is, even to sleep with people who they really didn't want to, who they would never find attractive, simply because that man had power and money and could get them what they wanted. Of course, they were taking a chance because, you know, if the guy's a sleaze, he may not come through. And I'm telling you, I found Hollywood to be pretty sleazy. I know that's a generality, but I found it pretty sleazy, and I found it to be the rule rather than the exception. And you wonder, how am I going to come full circle? Well, now you have these accusations towards Judge Roy Moore 4 weeks before an election in which they have to go back 40 years in order to find somebody that he may or may not have abused. Now, if it's true, if he went after a 14-year-old and he was 32, that's pretty creepy. No, it's illegal. However, there is a lot to wonder about here. He's been, he ran for office and successfully won something like 4 different times. He's been in politics for decades upon decades, and only now did they dig somebody up from 40 years ago. The question is, are words actions or are they words? There is a great hysteria going on today. And yet, people are still very, very selective in their outrage. The same Hollywood that's going crazy right now, every day, you need a scorecard. Today, I just saw there's new accusations against Richard Dreyfuss. And this doesn't surprise me, but I'm not going to immediately decide that Richard Dreyfuss is either a molester or anything else until I hear some facts about the case. It's very easy to accuse people if you have it in for them. If you can always believe women, and if they're always supposed to be believed, then that gives women free rein and complete immunity to go after anybody that they want. And yet, they didn't go after anybody for 40 years. It's just not that simple. So I have an issue with that. So stay tuned on that issue. Stay tuned because there's more to be told. We're going to move on now to the issue, oh my, of Donna Brazile and her book. In the last week, we've seen Donna Brazile, a very high-level liberal Democrat activist, who was, for a time, she was employed and stepped in for Debbie Wasserman Schultz when the WikiLeaks discover that Debbie Wasserman Schultz was colluding with Hillary to make an unfair campaign against Bernie Sanders. Well, now Donna Brazile has written a book called Hacks, in which she has verified exactly that. Now, in the last week, she was quite combative and doing interview after interview. And there are a lot of things that she said in her interview. But what struck me more than anything else was something, again, it's usually the media makes sure not to say the most important thing. You hear it downplayed, but you don't really hear what could be the most bombshell thing of all. And that is that she said she was afraid for her life. Wow. If you remember, Seth Rich was another activist working in the Clinton campaign. If you read a lot of on the internet, you'll find a lot of surprising people have disappeared over the years who have worked for, who have been affiliated with the Clintons. Seth Rich was a young man who was shot in the back at 4 a.m. And it was ruled, I think, nothing to see here. Go on, move on. Now, Donna Brazile, who was in the Clinton campaign, was really quite concerned about this. Now, to me, that is huge. She's the first person to blow the whistle on Hillary Rodham Clinton, not just what she says, but how she's been treated. After she started doing her interviews about her book, it's interesting that the left turned on her in a very big way. They called her, she just shouldn't be believed, she should be ignored. A lot of people just, they turned all their guns on Donna Brazile. One of my questions is, why isn't that racist? The left always accuses anybody of, in the case of Barack Obama, if you didn't agree with Barack Obama, you were automatically a racist. It didn't really matter if it was policy. Doesn't matter. That was the classic line. If you disagree with Barack Obama, you are a racist. Why is it the left is not a racist for disagreeing with Donna Brazile? Why? Because they have situational outrage. And I would submit that it's all very, very expedient when they're outraged and when they're not. The other problem is that they telegraph this outrage to a very willing, some would say, controlling media that telegraphs to the minions what they're supposed to and not supposed to be outraged by. They never hold themselves accountable to the same standards as everyone else. And so they're not ever held accountable for trashing Donna Brazile. Now, two issues here. One is Donna Brazile has been walking back her charges. I'm telling you, if she was afraid for her life, I guess I could understand why she's walking back her charges. I would encourage you to watch this story. Watch this story as it unfolds. You know, break out the popcorn because it is an interesting one. The other thing about the Donna Brazile story, which of course I've lost my train of thought because there's so darn much going on. Oh, wait, here. Terry McAuliffe, who is the outgoing governor of Virginia, and we just had a race for that in Virginia. Here's what Terry McAuliffe, a quintessential Clintonian, said. Nobody cares. You know what they care about? They care about beating Donald Trump tomorrow. They care about beating Ed Gillespie. Ed Gillespie, unfortunately, was beat on Tuesday. Not one person in Virginia who's looking for a job wants to get health care, making sure their kids get a quality education. You see how they're able to obfuscate? And that is an enormous diss of Donna Brazile to say that nobody cares what she has to say. I mean, she is the first whistleblower ever to actually point to what's going on in the Clinton machine. So let me continue here. I would ask, why now, other than the fact that Donna Brazile wrote a book, why do you think she's coming forward now? Why was she afraid for her life? That just gets glossed over. Is it principle that she just didn't like what they were doing? Now, you may remember that Donna Brazile was the person who actually got fired from CNN as a commentator. These people are all in bed with each other because she gave the questions to Hillary Clinton. That was also revealed by WikiLeaks. By the way, WikiLeaks has never yet been found to be wrong. It was WikiLeaks who put out the tapes of the Clinton campaign and the emails. They put out enormous number of Podesta emails. It gets so complicated. I'm telling you, sometimes it's hard to get your brain wrapped around some of these issues. That's why it's hard to sometimes report on them, because you look at it and you say, well, how could you possibly explain that to a person who isn't as much of a junkie as you and I are? How do you explain, for example, the Uranium One deal? Here we have, here we have Obama and Hillary Clinton, his Secretary of State, selling, mind you, 20% of our uranium to the Russians. Now, if you sell and you get paid for something that isn't yours to sell and you fence it to someone else, that's called theft, my friends. Theft. I hear the music and I just got into the Uranium One deal. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to ask you, invite you to listen to Spouting Off Tuesday, 1 p.m. Mountain, 2 p.m. Mountain and 1 p.m. Pacific for Spouting Off. And we're going to talk about not only the Uranium One deal, but so much more going on. It is a pleasure. Thank you, Doug. Thank you to everyone who helps me do this. I just love it. Thank you for listening to Spouting Off, and I'll be back with you on Tuesday this coming week.